kite. There will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Bank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world.
Eight. Seven. You recording?
Yeah, I was going to record your countdown. I thought it was cute.
Three, two, one.
Coming to you live from the basement of Malfoy Manor, it's Seriously Potter!
Hi.
Hey. We got a new intro.
Yeah, it's cute.
Just like we do every week. So yeah, we're in the basement of Malfoy Manor, just chilling out. Divya is being tortured.
Yeah.
We're not too worried.
It's gonna be okay.
We thought, you know... Why waste time? We're recording while she's being tortured. Oh, that is messed up.
Yeah,
we're sad people.
Bad. Well, Divya knows we're bad people. It's not like she'll be surprised.
Oh, yeah. She's fine. Yeah, she's fine. I can still hear her screaming, so she's alive. Woo!
If anything, I think she'd be mad if we didn't podcast, honestly.
Yeah, I think she would. That would be very Hermione. Didn't get anything done. You were being tortured. You didn't get anything done.
Yeah.
So it's another planned by Elliot episode, which I find hilarious. But I also find it fun. I have a main discussion for us today, and I'm pretty sure we haven't done it before. But I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love when Elliot plans episodes. Halfway because they're really awesome, and halfway because I don't have to do any work.
I know I'm also less of a. Proactive, organized. Like, I don't have a notebook. I just sort of have it all in my brain. It's more, I'm like an impressionist, or like maybe even modern art.
Modern art.
You're a little bit more. I'm like the Pollock of podcasting. Yeah. I just splatter all my Harry Potter thoughts onto GarageBand.
Oh, was that your knuckles? That's
yeah,
gross.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't know they would make that noise. That was really exciting. I just popped my knuckles and felt like a bad... I mean a bad... slut. We are, this is unrelated. Never mind.
This is episode 73.
This
Can
is
we say
episode
that?
73.
Dude, I don't know if we
Coming to
that.
You live from the basement of Malfoy Manor. Divya's being tortured.
We need you.
Sorry, Dibs. Yeah, she's still screaming. Well, should we get started on main topic for the week? Or people are going to email it for the first time ever and just be like, you guys are disgusting. And we are. We're just trying to elicit a reaction. So I thought we would, because we are... This is no secret, I don't think. We are graduating seniors, even though we're obviously not taking our senior year. We're instead traveling the countryside and destroying Horcruxes.
And being trapped by our schoolmates in his basement.
Yeah, it's weird. It didn't happen to me before. I thought we would maybe do a little retrospective of the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers over the years at Hogwarts that we've had because we went to Hogwarts. I think maybe the metaphor is stretching a little bit thin. So we're going to drop it for a second and you need to forgive me. Let's talk about through all the books.
I was wondering, I was like, how is he going to keep this up through the whole episode?
I know, I really don't think I can do that. I'm not that good an actor. I've never been on stage before.
Okay, go.
So I thought we would talk about maybe, you know, the position in general and its curse and maybe how we think the different Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers contributed to the plot in a very direct way, which sometimes they did. Sometimes their contribution to the plot was a little bit more secondary, but they always sort of reflected some part of Harry. I feel like every year the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher reflected where Harry was somehow in his development. And I thought that's an interesting device to show, you know, because when you're in high school from 6th grade to the 12th grade, you change a lot. And I think it's interesting to that she did that. I mean, A, it gives a built-in plot device every single book, but B, I think it helps show Harry's internal change from book to book. So do you want to...
Well, I just love something random, so I'll save that for... We'll talk about that.
Something random. Oh, for another book?
I don't know, because you were saying, like, how you change from 6 to 12, and I think it's really great that Harry, for the most part, has a lot of the same teachers mm-hmm. all 7 years, so he kind of gets, like... Imagine how cool it is for the teachers to see a student from consistently change. Because I've had teachers I've known for my entire time at my school, but they haven't been with me every single year.
The question is, how many papers are those? Once again, J.K. Rowling, your logistics are ridiculous. McGonagall is teaching, like, how many periods could they fit in a day? Like, 8?
Well, okay, like, all
time of... turners aside.
Like, okay. Because houses have classes together, and apparently there's only, like, 14 kids in each year or something like that for each house. That we see.
So are they just huge classes? Are they just, well, like, so almost, like, 60-person classes?
So, no, it like if Slytherin and Gryffindor went together, that'd just be, like, a 27-person class. Or 28, I can imagine.
But then, so you've got 2 classes each year, and they're teaching 7 years.
Yeah.
And so that's 14 classes on each teacher. It's a lot. I'm just saying, I'm watching you. Madam Rowling, I'm watching
for your
math.
Just for the podcast listeners, he was pointing sketchily at the computer.
I don't know why threading. I personify the computer as J.K. Rowling, but I do. So
okay, now
book
back
one.
To your thing that was on topic.
Book one, Professor Quirrell. Should we mention that we're MacGyvering this, or should we just continue?
We can.
So there's really bad Wi-Fi. There's really bad radio signals in the basement of Malfoy Manor, and so we're actually broadcasting on an alternative network. The metaphor, once again, I'm just not really working it today. So if the recording suddenly sounds really different than it did 4 seconds ago, it's because of those technical difficulties of broadcasting from a basement.
Yeah, where, you know, there's
large,
people.
I mean, thick, this is an old house, thick stone walls.
Yeah.
Around us, a few charms. It's pretty, pretty intense, like camping. So, as I was saying.
Quirrell.
So, book one, this is when I started thinking through this. It was one of the ones that I found most interesting, that from the very beginning, if we think of the Defense Against the Dark Arts teachers as analogous to Harry in a way, he's got a piece of Voldemort hiding on the back of his head. And I think that is so cool because, you know, Harry has a piece of Voldemort inside of him, and it's like a little bit of foreshadowing of that from the very beginning. And Quirrell seems, you know, kind and... not kind, but... he seems innocent enough, sort of something you wouldn't think about. Just like Harry tries to avoid all of these weird, like the fact that he can speak Parseltongue and all of these weird little things he's noticed about himself that aren't normal. Obviously, when he thinks he's a muggle, he's not normal. But aren't even normal for other wizards, that he sort of tries to push to the back of his head. And then...
Sorry, I just couldn't. Anyway, continue.
And then he, you know, realizes that that all along, that I don't know. I just think it's incredibly. I thought that was so cool when I found that out. I don't know in what ways Quirrell really relates to where Harry was in book one per se. I don't know. Do you have any? You have any thoughts?
I don't know. I just think about Quirrell is he might, like, he was one of the very few teachers who I think actually taught Harry something in that subject. Like, he was trying to, like, I mean, Harry was complaining about how boring the class was, but I feel like they actually learned some stuff.
Like, in a classroom setting,
yeah.
Normal.
supposed to, like, hey, kids, let's...
There's a bug art in this thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Coral. He's always a very interesting character to me because it's just the one you least suspect.
Uh-huh.
Kind of in, like, when you're reading it for the first time, it's like, oh, my God, because you never even... Yeah. And so, I don't know.
I'm trying to remember reading it for the first time. That's such a weird... Like, you just said that, and I was like, there was a first time? I read book one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, is it picking up you? Sorry, yeah, basement difficulties.
Yeah, I just... Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. You just have to be kind of, like, loud. Like,
I will project.
Like, obnoxiously loud.
When am I not? Quirrell, it also, I think, stepping outside of my idea of it always... helping you understand where Harry is at a certain point in the series. It also establishes what sort of series the Harry Potter series is going to be. You know, that it's going to have these plot twists and these things that you least expect happening. And I don't know, I think it's a good... I cannot remember the first time I read it. My mom started reading these books to me before I can remember. So, but if I were to put myself in the shoes of somebody reading it for the first time, I think that would be the moment when I would go, oh, this is something special, this is something cool, like, look at what she's, this story is so good.
Stepping back to your, what was it, but, like, how Quirrell kind of is similar to Harry,
mm-hmm.
I think it's in the fact that they were both, it seemed they were kind of, like, both stepped on their entire life, and then they found something that allowed them to break out of that. Like, Harry... found Hogwarts in the school and he made friends, whereas Quirrell, he found Voldemort,
mm-hmm.
and he thought that through Voldemort he could change his life.
Mm-hmm. Empowered him in a negative way.
So I just...
That's interesting. I like that. And sort of analogous to Harry almost getting a choice between Gryffindor and Slytherin. Like, he could use his powers and his talents, not for good or for evil, not to say that Slytherin is evil, but... the book would not have turned out the same way if he had gone into Slytherin. I wonder if you put the sorting hat, this is so unrelated to my main topic or whatever, if you put the sorting hat on Harry after the Horcrux within Harry was destroyed, if it would still consider Slytherin. Or if the only thing, or if the sorting hat was just seeing that Voldemort-y piece. And I can't decide if there really is something about Harry's character, because that seems like a perfectly interesting explanation, that there is actually something about Harry that would make him do well in Slytherin, and I can see that for sure. Or if it was just purely the bit of Voldemort's soul that was making the sorting hat say that.
I like that you made the word Voldemort into an adjective.
Voldemort-y.
Yeah, my brain stopped for a second. I was like, did he just do that?
I can make anything into an adjective. I can just make it adjective-y.
Alright, so Lockhart,
book two. This, does it record when it's not?
Yeah, it is. I just need it.
I'm sorry, we're talking about technical stuff so much. You can cut this out. So Lockhart in book two.
Yeah.
This one, really, for me, obviously it's about ego and this inflated sense of self, and that Harry... could, if he wanted to, just completely rest on his laurels starting in childhood. Like, he has done something so cool, he can just be a child star and live some crappy life. But he doesn't really need to do much more. Like, thinking about it almost from our world perspective, he would be, you know... I guess that you can't say the kid with the super rich parents that can get into whatever school he wants, but almost that situation where, like, you're famous, you're well-known, you can just sort of cruise through life and be messed up, probably, because you're essentially a child star. And I think Harry might almost see... Ooh, this is interesting. Maybe each Defense of the Dark Arts teacher almost represents a different route he could take in his life. And, you know, if Quirrell was the stepped-on, abused person that then seeks revenge and allies himself with evil to feel powerful, then maybe Lockhart represents a little bit of an egomaniac inside Harry. Because there's a little bit, and there's a hint of that inside Harry, I think. More in the movies when he goes, I am the chosen one.
Smack.
That's the sixth, right?
Yeah. Oh,
storm. I'm sorry.
He just likes making actual.
I do. I was going to be like, no, Vanessa, I just let it slip. I do like making extra.
What I was going to say is I was kind of thinking that they kind of take, like, for both of Quirrell and Lockhart, they kind of take what Harry's feeling at the time to the extreme. Like, with Quirrell, he took Harry's new sense of, like, acceptance and purpose to the extreme with Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Lockhart kind of took Harry's confidence and ego to the extreme. Because I think second year, he's not, like, egotistical, but I think there's a certain confidence about him. Like, you know, I've been to Hogwarts before. I kind of know what's going on now. Like, you know, when you come back a second year for school and you're like,
I got this.
Grade, like, been there, done that. So I think it's just kind of like Harry's confidence and then Lockhart
and he sees the dangers of that. Yeah, he sees where that could lead if he went down that path. I like that. J.K. Rowling, you're a really good author.
And I think Harry should be confident. I don't know. I'm on this whole, like, love yourself and self-esteem kick.
Oh, but
and
that's
different,
I think, from narcissism.
I mean,
Lockhart lies and has an inflated sense of self.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think I just tangent off. I think Harry's just great and maybe a little unrealistic in the fact that he's just done so much, but he's so humble about it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I feel like
what Lockhart does is not confidence. Like, Lockhart has to lie about his accomplishments and make more of them than actually happen to feel good about himself. And I don't think that's confidence. I think that's what's different. That's the distinction between narcissism and confidence, is that narcissism is actually a symbol of not being totally self-assured, because you have to be obsessed with yourself to feel worthy.
Yeah.
More on Oprah after this.
Yeah, I feel sort of like, love yourself, everyone.
And you get a car, and you get a car.
The true thing, see the thing on, I think it was Tumblr, where they said Oprah should become Pope, and you get saved,
and you get saved. I saw that. Oprah and Beyonce, both. It was just her. It was just like her face photoshopped over the Pope's, and it was awesome. Like, she just looked so good in the robe and everything.
So, next, Lupin, right?
Next, Lupin. And this is one of the really interesting ones, because his character doesn't really get fully developed until later.
Yeah.
Because you don't find out sort of his, I mean, until the seventh book.
Sorry, I was having troubles with my sweatshirt. Continue talking.
We're in a basement. She's having troubles with her robe. Chains. The chain. Because aren't we tied up a little bit?
I don't know. I was warm. So I took off.
It's warm in this basement.
the pipe must have... Okay, anyway, talk about Lupin.
He's interesting in that we don't really... I mean, we get a big twist in his character in the third book in that he's a werewolf. But that ends up being almost more of a metaphor for what happens later when we discover that this man that we idolize... Because, like, I idolize Lupin. You love Lupin when you read that book. I mean, you just love the balls out of him. Like, he's just the best.
Really? Is that what you...
That's an expression.
Is that common that people use?
I was going to say love the shit out of him, and then I thought, let's not make more work for Vanessa.
I don't know if we can include love the balls out of him.
Okay.
Anyway,
here, let's try it again. You just love Lupin. You just love the shapoopy out of him.
That's good. It's like a Miss Thomas word.
And then you know, in the same way that everyone thinks he's human and then they discover that he's not entirely human, in the course of the whole story, you think he's this great guy and then you discover that he has these flaws. I mean, he's so... Book 7, you just... It was like a deep and real moment when you find out that he's... basically trying to abandon his family. Ugh.
What I was gonna say is that it kind of, like, I think Lupin kind of represents Harry's past. Because at the time in Harry, I'm gonna get a little psychoanalyze-y.
Analytical. Psychoanalytical is the word she was looking for.
I like mine better. Anyway, just because in that time in Harry's life when he's, you know, he's growing into, I guess, I don't want to say manhood. That sounds young. Weird. Yeah, he's growing, he's you know, becoming a man in the least cliche way you could say that. And when that happens, you look for cues from your parents, from the people around you.
Like who, teachers?
Yeah, on who you're going to be. And Harry, like, he doesn't get those cues at the Dursleys. And so the fact, I think that he's taking, I think a big part of this is him taking his cues from Lupin on what kind of man he wants to be, and then finding out what kind of man his father was, and taking cues from that. So I think that's what's really important.
And he, for the first time, finds a father figure.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that he doesn't really choose Hagrid, nor Uncle Vernon, obviously, nor Dumbledore as a father figure. Like, they're important figures, but, you know, Vernon is obviously not warm enough. I mean, he'll always just be his uncle. But, I'm sorry, that one was actually an accident.
I know, I know.
Hagrid much more takes the position of a friend. You know, a mentor in the beginning to show him the... We talked about this as well. To show him the wizarding world, but, you know, still more of a friend. And Dumbledore is a mentor, but not a father figure, I would say. Dumbledore... Oh, it was almost like a religious figure in a way. Like, he teaches him how to be good, but not just how to be a guy, a man. I don't know. And Lupin is the first person to really take up that
role. Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, I wasn't going to finish the sentence.
Oh, yes, okay. Role. Sorry, I thought you were looking for a word.
So, yeah, I guess we can say that Lupin represents, you know, he's 13. If he was Jewish, you know, if he's becoming a man.
A bat mitzvah. Are there wizard Jews? Jewish wizards?
I don't know. That's, we've talked about this before. Like, how does religion work? They all celebrate Christmas.
Okay, anyway, sorry. No, I don't want to talk about this now. I just had that. I don't know, I just quickly thought. I just, okay, I forgot it. I have a good magical music though.
I'm so excited for magical music. It's coming up. So, I guess if we're going to say it represents something that happening to Harry in that book, it would be becoming a man.
Yeah.
And in the overall arch of things, it maybe represents, I don't know, seeing people as three-dimensional. Seeing people, accepting people for their flaws.
And I think it's also one of those, like, you never truly know someone.
Yeah.
Like, even though, like, I mean, even now, like, you have teachers. Like, I have a teacher who I'm really close with, you know. And it's one of those, I think I know everything, and then I learn something new about him, and I'm like, what? I don't want to say his name, but I think you know.
Yeah. No, and it's like, honestly, in book seven, that's the moment with Lupin is the moment that I knew that Harry was actually ready to go out and do this. Because up until that point, I've been like, you didn't want to take your friends with you? Really? You dumbass. Of course they're going to come with you. You're going to do this? Of course. You know, like, I just felt like he was being really childish about the whole thing and not approaching it as the serious task it was. And when he basically says to Lupin no and stands up to an adult that he so admired because he knows what is right, that's the moment when you realize that Harry is capable of completing this task. So in some ways, the third book is a setup for that moment.
Yeah.
Speaking of nobody is who they seems...
Mad-Eye Moody,
or not really...
Cool. Okay, first of all, I think, like, Mad-Eye Moody's class is pretty much the only defense against dark arts where he really learned how to defend himself against dark arts. I mean, Lupin's was cool, but I don't feel like it was really defense against dark arts.
Yeah, it was weird.
So, weird, like, I think actually, or maybe Barty Crouch, I think he actually learned something.
Well, that is interesting that a dark wizard taught him a lot. That's where we learned about the killing curse.
Maybe Voldemort would have actually been an okay teacher. Just, I don't know. Anyway. But what I was going to say about Moody is I think he kind of represents how much more dangerous things are getting for Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's a Death Eater coming to kill Harry. Then also just the stuff he's teaching is way more intense.
Uh-huh.
And just way more, like, there are things that are going to kill you.
Yeah, so this world is real. Like, that's the last... The book four is really... I mean, literally, it's the center of the series. But... It represents a pretty big transition in the books from being self-contained, shorter. Obviously, it's the first one that's crazy long, even though for children's books, the first three are quite long. The fourth book is the literal center of the series. and this is dumb, but, you know, in size, it is the first one to be super big, like the second half of the series. And if you think about, like, the cover art, those last three books are those one-color covers. And book four is still sort of has one foot in the childhood sense of the book, in that it's a multicolored cover. And I don't know, it's been, when I first read the series, or in my, up until recently, I would have told you it was my least favorite book, for those reasons, and that I couldn't really identify it as, is it a book one through three book, where you can read it and take it as a story in itself, and it's just sort of like, Harry went on an adventure, or is it sort of the last three books, where Harry is working towards this one higher task, and it seems, and it really is it's a transitory book in the series, which makes it difficult. But I think that Moody really does represent that darker things are coming. I mean, that scene in the book, I wasn't allowed to read book four for a long time, I remember. Because that scene when he teaches them about the killing curses and the torture is really hard to read. They did an okay job in the movie. It wasn't perfect, yeah. But
it's Neville scene. Broke my heart!
Oh, I know. When he goes up to him and he's,
I'm also in love with Matthew Lewis.
So that less reflects upon Harry as a person and more upon the series. Yeah. And they do that as well. Reflect upon where the Wizarding World is.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
The fourth book's my absolute favorite.
Like, really?
I love it. It's my favorite book.
It's not my least favorite anymore. I think I might reread it this summer to try to get it. I just don't, it's the one that I don't really have a handle on, I guess, which sounds weird. It's like young adult literature. Come on, Elliot. But it really, like, I don't quite have a handle on it. It's the one that Entertainment Weekly released. I'm sure I've said this on this podcast before, but Entertainment Weekly released lists of the new classics, and it was recent. I'm not sure if it was 50 years or 100 years or 10 years or what, but it was recent books, movies, plays that are going to be high class in many years, you know, like read in schools. And they cited book four as the Harry Potter book that was going to be the new classic. And it does, in a lot of ways, meet that. It follows a good hero's journey structure. And I don't know. It's interesting.
So we have 4 minutes to go through the remaining two.
Okay.
So
five, Umbridge is... I'm going to go out on a limb here. Umbridge is the best character in the Harry Potter series.
Yes. Like, I love to hate her.
Such a reaction. I know, like, you just... She's so well written. You just cringe and you just... Oh, Umbridge.
And I will say, I think Imelda Staunton is one of the few actresses in the Harry Potter series that just... Yes.
Dead on.
That is it. Because you know,
I mean, the only thing that's different from Imelda Staunton from my Umbridge in my head is Imelda Staunton is prettier.
Yeah.
Not as toady. And my Umbridge in my head is still intact, and her Umbridge on screen is just as real to me.
Just fantastic.
She does a great job. This one is interesting. So she really represents the Wizarding World. I mean, she really represents the censorship coming into the school, obviously. But in some ways, it's a really insecure time for Harry. And in some ways, he is beating down and repressing his own feelings. And I think in a way, she can represent that. She can represent his own censorship of himself in a way. That, you know, when you're 15, that happens.
You know, it's the fact that he thinks he's alone in this, and he can't tell anybody anything. And, you know, she's kind of that. And I feel like she's kind of a manifestation of how absolutely angry he is with himself and with the world and with his friends. And I think
self-destructive. I mean, she has him basically carve into his hand.
And I think she's kind of the epitome of all those feelings, like, wrapped into one person. Uh-huh. Like, she's validating every single thing he feels.
And I wonder if, I mean, the books, I mean, they're not written in the first person, but the books are from Harry's perspective for the most part. And I wonder if we got some vision of the books from somebody else's perspective, if Umbridge was actually that bad. Or if Harry was really attributing everything that was wrong to her in a more extreme way than was maybe necessarily true. I would love for her to do, like, what Stephanie Meyer was threatening to do. with the, what's it called, Midnight Sun?
Yeah. I actually really wanted to read that too. I thought it was going to be really, no, I'm not going to go into that. Sorry.
Did you get mad? I don't know. Okay. We don't talk about Twilight
What happened is it leaked, and instead of doing what Warner Brothers and Scholastic does and just pulls the leak, she got really upset and really offended and said she wasn't going to continue writing it. But then she wrote The Host, and everyone in that movie is attractive. So anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, what was I saying? I think it would be really interesting to read the Harry Potter series written from a different perspective. I don't know if J.K. Rowling should do it, because she should move on to other projects, and she has, and that's great, and I'm proud of her. Book 5, I think we just did it.
Well, I would just have to say about Book 5, because I read it the first time. When did it come out? I think I read it when I was still in elementary school, so, 9 or 10, somewhere around there. And, I hated it. I was like, Harry is awful. I hate reading it. But then, as I grew up and, when I read it, after I became a teenager, I was like, yes, this is how I feel all the time. Yeah.
Book 5 is my favorite.
Yeah.
Mostly because it's a mess. I've said this before, too. I love Book 5 because there's just so many plots in it. It's just like a fan fiction exploded everywhere. And it serves my nerdiness so well.
Okay, so Snape. Once again, I think actually the only teacher they pretty much learned anything from.
Yeah.
Him and Moody, that's pretty much it.
When I thought of this topic, I didn't think about Snape. Book 6, I mean, J.K. Rowling herself describes it as sort of Book 7, Part 1. Really the last two books are one story told in two parts. And in some ways it is. Snape is almost, he's death sneaking up on Dumbledore. He's, Harry's past, he comes to represent a lot of Harry's past and his interactions with Lily, that we learn more about throughout the series. I don't know, what do you think?
I think it's also the time when, for lack of a better term, it gets real.
Oh my god! I'm gonna have to edit that out, Vanessa.
Oh, really, Ellie? You're gonna edit?
I'm gonna have to edit that out. And it's gonna annoy the out of me.
Okay. Because I think, even with the darker tone set in the fourth book, I don't think it really becomes real that Harry is gonna have to fight Voldemort until the sixth book. I think what Snape is teaching him, how intense it's getting, it's more like, this is what the real world is like, and this is what you're gonna have to do. And I don't think Snape was really intentionally preparing him for that, but I think it just kind of symbolizes, you're gonna have to fight Voldemort and here's some skills to do it.
It does, and it's the first time. I actually do remember reading the sixth book for the first time and being like, it's Snape? You sort of anticipate who's the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher gonna be. It's a whole new character, I'm so excited. And then the fact that it's Snape almost feels like it's jarring, that it's just a reshuffling and not a new person. Now, there is Slughorn, who sort of...
And you got all ramped up for Slughorn, too. I was so ready.
Sort of takes the role, book-wise, he takes the role of the new teacher that we learn about. We can talk about Slughorn. Do you think Slughorn represents a particular book six, sort of?
I don't know. I really like Slughorn, though. Not helpful in any way. I just like his character. I think he's just small and adorable.
I thought he was a ridiculous character. There are absolutely teachers that collect students. And I didn't know that when I read... Once again, it was elementary school. I didn't really know a lot about the world, I guess. But there are absolutely teachers that collect students. And it's an interesting quality. And I'm not going to say it's bad or good. It's just interesting.
Yeah. I think that was really, and we dragged that on for at least 30 minutes.
We had 6 books to get through.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
At book 7, it doesn't really affect the story. Yeah. What's their names? The Karos?
Yeah. That's just dark arts. They just torture students. So that's not really.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well.
Magical music?
Let's do the fabled Nazca. I don't think we're going to have time for casting couch, but that's okay. I'll save it for later.
So, I was cleaning out my room, and I found songs, Wizard of Rock songs, that Divya and I wrote when we were in 8th grade.
Oh my
So, God. I'm going to lay them out, and Elliot, you get a choice of which one you would like to sing.
Okay, I don't know the melodies.
Oh, you know the melodies. So first we have I Kissed a Dementor to the tune of I Kissed a Girl. On the same vein, we have I Kissed a Basilisk to the tune of I Kissed a Girl. Then we have we have Wizarding Idiot. It was more of a parody of Canadian Idiot by Weird Al than American Idiot by Green Day. And then our number one hit by the Plain White Tees, Hey There, Ginevra.
Oh my god.
We have a bunch more, but
I think these are four. The Basilisk. I don't know why I find that one so funny. But maybe we'll have time for two.
Okay.
Okay.
Would you like a melody, or do you still want to see if I can find one, or do you just want to go
for
it?
Let's see, if it's not in my key, we won't use it.
Okay. I think this is an amount.
Let's see if it's good enough.
Yay, okay. I think. Maybe. Come on.
This was never the way I planned. Not my intention. I got so brave, sword in hand. Lost my discretion. It's not what I'm used to. Just wanna try it on. I'm curious for it. Caught my attention. I kissed the basilisk and I liked it. The taste of the poisonous chapstick. I kissed the basilisk just to try it. I hope my dear don't petrify me. It felt so wrong, it felt so right. Don't mean I'm dying tonight. I kissed a basilisk and I liked it. I liked it.
Do you want to keep going?
I don't know. Let's do it.
Okay.
No, I don't even know its name. It doesn't matter. You're my experimental game. Just human nature. It's not what good wizards do. Not how they should behave. My head gets so confused. Hard to obey. I kissed a basilisk and I liked it. The taste of the poisonous chapstick. I kissed a basilisk just to try it. I hope it don't petrify me. It felt so wrong, it felt so right. Don't mean I'm dying tonight. I kissed a basilisk and I liked it. I liked it. Basilisks, they are so magical. Slimy skin, yellow eyes, so kissable. Hard to resist, so touchable. Too good to deny it. Ain't no big deal, it's innocent. Didn't want to sing that note. And I kissed a basilisk and I liked it. The taste of the poisonous chapstick. I kissed a basilisk just to try it. I hope it don't petrify me. It felt so wrong, it felt so right. Don't mean I'm dying tonight. I kissed a basilisk and I liked it. I liked it.
Thank you for doing that. You see, Divi and I, we were actually, I think I wrote this one. We were budding songwriters.
I'm so proud.
I wrote these three. I wrote I Kissed a Dementor, I Kissed a Basilisk, and Wizarding Idiot. And then Divi and I wrote Hey There, Ginevra. Hey There, Ginevra's pretty great.
Let's just read
the first stanzas.
Hey there, Ginevra, what's it like in New- what's it like back at the borough? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girls, I hope you're eating a churro. Yes, I do.
Enjoying a churro.
Sorry. It's salty, fat, and sugary, too. You know it's true.
Yeah, see?
Hey there, Ginevra, don't you worry about the danger. Just go along to Hogwarts. I'll take care of those horcruxes. Ride your broom. Play some Quidditch for me, too. I miss you. I miss that, too. Oh, Voldemort's a git. Oh, Voldemort's a git.
Voldemort to get. Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. I was so proud of this.
And then Wizarding Idiot. Don't want to be a wizarding idiot. Don't want to be a butterbeard Quidditch nut. Do I look like some spellcasting wizard kid? Going to Hogwarts is the best thing I ever did. Wow. I'm a fan of all of these.
Yay.
Why did this not happen?
I don't know. Like, we were, like, important, and I was
How did also... this... How was this the thing to survive and not the band?
Yeah, I don't know, because it was... Yeah, because the original... The idea was to do a Wizard Rock band, and then we just created the podcast to promote the band.
Wow, but that's bizarre. But the podcast
survived.
And the site, too, was much bigger. That was another thing that... Like, when we were in 8th and 9th grade, the band... Or the site was really great. Big.
We were faster than CNN. Like, I bragged to people. I
was so proud of that. That was me from Las Cruces.
Well,
it was swine flu, wasn't it? Wasn't it that Rupert Grint got swine flu?
Well, it's directly proportional to how much homework we got. It was the influx of homework.
Yeah, that sort of ended that.
But for, I guess we're done now.
Yeah.
Because we're a little out of time. But I saw these in the room.
I think Dimmy is done being tortured.
Yeah. Oh, crap. My turn. Okay. Well, I'm gonna go up there. But first, hey, you just wait.
We have something to do. Excuse me. Do you see that we're busy? Oh my God, people are so rude.
So inconsiderate. Anyway, before we go, get tortured, let's do some host recommendations.
Host recommendations. Let me think.
I won.
You have won? Okay.
Okay, so on Senior Ditch Day, or what would have been Senior Ditch Day if we weren't in the woods, I saw The Host. It was such a good movie. Jake Abel's in it. He plays Ian, and he is gorgeous. So if you don't even care about the story, just go to the movie theater to stare at all the beautiful men who are in that film.
I recommend the opposite. Do not.
Oh.
My host recommendation is to not see The Host and do literally anything else.
Okay, Ellie, have you seen?
No, I haven't. We're good. We're good.
No, I have. Okay.
Of course, you have photos on.
See, look how beautiful they are. Like, look at just those
What's
two...
What's up with their eyes?
Well, her, she's an alien. That's why her eyes are like that. Their eyes are normal.
I should have known.
But they're beautiful, Elliot.
Okay. This has been serious.
Okay, I rarely go off on a girly moment like that. So
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. My host recommendation... I recently read a book, her name is Margaret Atwood. It's The Handmaid's Tale. And it's a movie with Natasha Richardson, too. But it sort of takes place in a dystopian future where men have multiple wives, and each wife has a different role. And so it's from the perspective of one of the wives wears all red, and she is just in charge of giving birth. Like, that's her sole purpose. And she goes from house to house having babies for the man of the house. And then there's ones in green that sort of do the cooking and cleaning aspect, and ones in blue that are, like, the main wives. I won't say any more than that. It has some it has biblical basis.
That's really
the Handmaid's Tale part. It's very interesting. I'm not... generally as into, this is going to sound terrible, fantasy and science fiction.
Which is weird,
but all my favorite books are fantasy and science fiction. Like, I generally read sort of like plays, domestic realism, stuff like that. Catcher in the Rye.
Elliot just reads classy things, and I just read
I'm pretty classy.
Yeah. Elliot's very
classy. I read less than you, though. You read, like, a large amount of stuff that I envy you.
I've read 60 books this year.
That's insane. I've read, like, 4. But... all my favorites are Harry Potter. I love this Handmaid's Tale. Fahrenheit 451, fantastic book.
That's interesting.
I don't know what this is about me. So
there was one like actual like substance in recommendation, and then one my recommendation, which was just stare
at look at hot guys. Actually, I recommend that too.
Yeah, just do that.
From Seriously Potter, in the basement of Malfoy Manor, telling you to look at hot guys. This has been episode 73.
We'll see you next time for 74, if I make it out alive. Okay, I'm coming. Will you just calm down?
She's coming. She's okay. Vanessa. I'm Elliot.
Okay, we'll see you guys next time.
Good night.
Bye.
Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Frank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Mrs. K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. His tricks without a sound, and Mr. H will demonstrate 10 Somersets he'll undertake on solid ground. It means some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight Mr. Kite is topping the bill.